The annual general meeting is coming up pretty soon at the end of the month, and the nomination forms are in the foyer.
You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
We have a very special chalice, a candle in our chalice today that I'm going to invite Jane to come and light. I don't know whether you can see from here, but it's got a bushwalker on it. And as Jane is lighting it, you'll know it's a candle for Clive, who was a much loved member of our congregation. Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy and generosity. Come and you shall know peace and joy. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship, especially warm welcome to those worshipping with us either for the first time or those we haven't seen for a while. My name's Jenny Dyster, I'm the lay leader of this congregation. Since 1854, Unitarians have worshipped as a fellowship in our state. Back then, Unitarians described themselves as Christian Unitarians, not Unitarian Universalists. The services had much more Bible in them and fewer references to the wisdom of other faith traditions. Our Christian heritage is visible here in the stained glass windows from the big church in Wakefield Street, and John Dowie's wonderful painting, and of course the pipe organ donated by Doris Huber. You'll also see the hanging on the pulpit, which was chosen to draw attention to the importance of our Indigenous heritage, something that modern Unitarians have given rather more emphasis to. The land we meet on today is the land of the Kaurna people, and we respect and bless their spiritual relationship with their country, the elders, past and present. Our Unitarian Church is a spiritual community, one that supports you in seeking and following your own spiritual path. That path may have its origins in any other faith tradition, in any ethnic origin. You may belong to communities not generally or necessarily associated with church going. Humanist, atheist, LGBTIQ, or political activists. We welcome you, no matter whom you love or whom you vote for. Your path is yours to find and follow, and the role of the church is to support you on that path, any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world. Kierkegaard said the purpose of prayer is not to influence God, but gently and gradually to transform ourselves. And the purpose of meditation is the same. So take a moment and sitting comfortably, draw your attention within. Close your eyes if you wish and be still. Be comfortable. Be calm. Be wholly within your own being. I will sound a bell at the end of the quiet time. Prayer for myself. May I be grateful for what I have. May I remember that I don't need most of what I want, and that joy is found in simplicity and generosity. Sometimes I need to give and not count the cost, to fight and not heed the wounds, to toil and not seek for rest, to labour and not seek reward. May I develop the spiritual strength to be charitable, especially in times of stress and need. We're doing something a little different for the reading today, sharing it around. It will introduce the topic of the address, and I'm going to ask John Eaton to start us off.
Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal.
And though I have the gift of prophecy, and understand all mysteries and all knowledge. And though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, and have not charity, I am nothing.
And although I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, And though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profits me nothing.
Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away.
For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. And when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done. And now abideth faith, hope, and charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity. Have you done any of these in the following month? Helped a stranger or someone you didn't know who needed help? Donated money to a charity? Volunteered your time for an organisation? Now, we won't have buzz time to share what we do. My aim isn't to make you feel bad about not doing enough or smug about the amount that we do. My aim today is to just take time to think about what charity is, what the benefits are, what the pitfalls are, and why the idea of charity can cause a degree of irritation, discomfort, and agitation. If I asked you to put your hands up if you'd like to be a recipient of charity, you'd just sit on them, wouldn't you? Now, if hypothetically I were operating a really lucrative scam, I wouldn't want to flag it. I'm a recipient of charity. And if I wasn't making ends meet, I wouldn't want to shout that from the rooftops either. What defines a charity? Well, it's an organisation with specific purposes defined in law to be exclusively for public benefit. It's one definition. Its sole purpose must be charitable. It can't be to make a profit or provide private benefit to anyone. There's some Australian charities: Red Cross, Smith Family, Wildlife Rescue, World Vision, and the Medicine Without Borders. You can group charities into six categories: educational, health, environmental, animal, art and culture, or international, NGOs. Governments need to make sure that civil society organisations are regulated in a fair, open, consistent way to make it easy for people to give and offer incentives for giving where possible. And the organisations must be non-profits. They promote civil society, providing an independent voice in public life. Governments don't always respect the right of non-profit organisations to speak out on important issues, especially around election time. International funders need to think about what happens after aid ends and therefore fund local organisations directly to improve accountability and the efficiency of aid. It's important to help grantees build sustainable domestic support and fund accordingly. To summarise, these are the central ideas. Charities, the voluntary giving of help, typically in the form of money, to those in need. The aim of charity is not to provide opportunities to be charitable. It's not to ensure the longevity of the charity. The care of the poor must not be left to private charity. The highest form of charity is to accept people into businesses and employ them, so they don't need charity. Part of the reason that charity is on the nose from the recipient's point of view is that it detracts from our inherent dignity. I'm sure you'll recognise this character. 9-year-old Oliver is a resident in the parish workhouse where boys are issued 3 meals of gruel a day, thin gruel, with an onion twice a week and half a roll on Sunday. The workhouse is run by Bumble the Beetle. Limpkins is the chairman of the board of guardians for the workhouse. Now, after 3 months of slow starvation on 3 bowls of thin gruel a day, one boy, who was tall for his age and hadn't been used to that sort of thing, for his father had kept a small cookhouse, hinted darkly to his companions that unless he had another basin of gruel per diem, he was afraid he might some night happen to eat the boy who slept next to him, who happened to be a weakly youth of tender age. He had a wild, hungry eye, and they implicitly believed him. A council was held, and lots were cast over who should walk up to the master after supper that evening and ask for more. And it fell to Oliver Twist. Love indeed. Now the master was a fat, healthy man, but he turned pale. He gazed in stupefied astonishment on the small rebel for some seconds and then clung for support to the copper. The assistants were paralysed with wonder and the boys were paralysed with fear. "What?" said the master at length in a faint voice. "Please, sir," replied Oliver, "I want some more." The master aimed a blow at Oliver's head with a ladle, pinioned him in his arm, and shrieked aloud for the beadle. The board was sitting in solemn conclave when Mr. Bumble rushed into the room in great excitement and, addressing the gentleman in the high chair, said, "Mr. Limpkins, I beg your pardon, Oliver Twist has asked for more." There was a general start. Horror was depicted in every countenance. "For more?" said Mr. Limpkins. "Compose yourself, Bumble, and answer me distinctly. Do I understand that he asked for more after he had eaten the supper allotted by the dietary?" "He did, sir," replied Bumble. "That boy will be hung," said the gentleman in the white waistcoat. "I know, that boy will be hung." Nobody controverted the prophetic gentleman's opinion. An animated discussion took place. Oliver was ordered into instant confinement, and a bill was next morning pasted on the outside of the gate, offering a reward for anyone to take Oliver Twist off the hands of the parish for £5. In other words, £5 and Oliver Twist was offered to any man or woman who wanted an apprentice to any trade, business, or calling. "I never was more convinced of anything in my life," said the gentleman in the white waistcoat as he knocked at the gate and read the bill next morning. "I never was more convinced of anything in my life than that boy will come to be hung." Now, that's fairly heavy 19th century satire, but charity can still carry just that much stigma and stench. To this day, charity is sometimes delivered by people who lack compassion and respect, and we still worry about the discrepancy between what is given by those who can give and what is received by people because they're poor. The slack is, of course, taken up by those who administer charities. And when one gets home to a letterbox stuffed with glossy brochures, decorated with stickers with our names and addresses and a heap of stuff you don't want, like barely functional ballpoint pens, lanyards, key rings and the like, it's obvious that charity is a bit of an industry in its own right. This perception is in sharp contrast with the view of charity as a theological virtue. This is the official view of the Roman Catholic Church, for example. Charity is the ultimate perfection of the human spirit. It has two parts, love of God, love of man, which includes both the love of one's neighbour and of oneself. In Islam, charity is seen as proof of one's faith, but it has an interesting feature. If you disclose your sadaqat, almsgiving, it is well. But if you conceal them and give to the poor, that is better for you. That's from the Quran. So let's have a look at how Australians, who are driven primarily neither by the Roman Catholic Church or Islam, how do we rate on the world stage? These figures come from the Charities Aid Foundation. 2018 is the first year Australia has ranked so highly. It's in the second position and we kept it for a while. And there's a reason for that. Bushfires. Australians donate quickly when others are burned out of house and home. The most generous country in the world is Indonesia. It's rated first in the world with a score of 69. That's 20% more than Australia. More than 8 in 10 Indonesians donated money regularly, and the country's rate of volunteering is more than 3 times the global average. The top most generous countries changed substantially in 2020. Many of the countries which consistently featured in the top 10 have fallen far down the rankings in the report. The United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, Ireland, the Netherlands have all seen massive drops. In their place are countries new to the top 10: Nigeria, Ghana, Uganda, Kosovo. Like much of the Western world, Australia and New Zealand also saw declines in their scores since 2018, but they remain in the year's top 10, and we're the only 2 high-income countries to do so. The resilience of giving in Australia and New Zealand might just represent timing, because our first wave of pandemic was a little later than that of Europe, and that's what it coincided with. We were in the first few weeks when these figures were taken. And the other thing is that there were more bushfires in 2020. Reports suggest that zakat payments, that is payments intended in Islamic countries for the needy, globally were particularly high in 2020 as a response to the pandemic. In Indonesia, there were calls from all the religious authorities for people to use such payments to help their communities that were suffering specifically because of the pandemic. By contrast, America, which had been in the top 5 for years, slumped to 19th. Indonesia remained at number 1. The other interesting thing to have a look at is the lowest scoring countries. Latvia, France, Pakistan, 25%, and so on. As with the top most generous countries, the bottom 10 countries appear on the surface to have very little in common. Some are blighted with poverty and unrest, like Lebanon. Others, the slump is more likely to be cultural, France, Italy, and Belgium. But Japan scores the lowest of all, with an index of 12, was 22 back in 2018. Japan historically has had an unusually limited civil society for an advanced industrialized nation. The rules around charitable giving are complex and expectations of state provision are high. Organized profits in Japan are a relatively new phenomena. Numbers don't tell the whole story. Some countries pay higher taxes and rely less on charity to support the poor. So a charity in one country might be a benefit, you claim, in another. Biologists, psychologists, and social scientists have long tried to define us exclusively through 3 instincts: survival, the drive to power, self-assertion, and the sexual urge. These, of course, are the instincts that tie us to our lizard brain, our animal past. The 4th instinct is what drives us to expand the boundaries of our caring to include community and the world around us. Empathy is not a quaint behaviour trotted out during intermittent visits to a food bank or during telethon on the television. Instead, it lies at the core of our human existence. The charge of our fourth instinct is to move us from the tyranny of fight-flight to the liberation of a practical spirituality that transforms our everyday life. And when we choose to evolve, when we choose to listen to the fourth instinct and live under its reign, we will change our lives and the world. And what's inspired me to choose the topic of charity is the recent activity of one of our own Unitarians, Alex Cebulski. In January 2022, Alex will travel to Portugal and Albania to meet with, work with, bring guitars, and offer mentoring and career planning to Iqbal, a young man of 19, and Shukriya, an 18-year-old young woman who was living in an orphanage in Kabul. Over the last 4 years, Alex has been working with them over Zoom while the kids were enrolled at the Afghanistan National Institute of Music. You may have heard of Dr. Samast. I'm sure you've heard of Ed Ayers. That was where she worked in Afghanistan. She was she then. There's been little change since. In August, the world watched in horror as the Taliban took over Kabul, banned non-religious music, curtailed women's rights in society and access to education, closed the one music education institution in the whole country. And when this happened, musicians destroyed, hid, or stored their instruments in fear of house-to-house searches by the Taliban. After repeated attempts to access evacuation flights, including a long spell outside Kabul airport on the day of the deadly explosion, these two young students made it out, against all odds. Now, while our kids were trying to get out, Alex was working around the clock advocating for them, securing scholarship letters, visa support letters, writing to politicians in Australia and abroad, and building a broader support network within a global musical community. This has led to a tremendous amount of goodwill that now stands to benefit these kids should they wish to apply for university entry at many of the world's major music schools. Melbourne's master, Sasha Amos, has generously donated one classical guitar to Iqbal, and currently sponsorship is sought for another instrument to be purchased for Shukriya. Likewise, Alex's advocacy has led to Iqbal receiving a substantial fellowship from the Guitar Foundation of America, something that hopefully will help him find his way to a sustaining university scholarship and independence. However, significant needs remain as these young people begin their lives in distant countries far away from their families. Right now, they've just won the lottery. They've escaped. But they've also left their families, perhaps forever, and they have nothing, no resources. They need mentoring in their craft as well as career development. They also need funds for basic personal needs, including safe housing, having the freedom to leave if it becomes unsafe, safe transport, and that means having enough cash to use a taxi occasionally. They need phones and data plans and even emergency funds to assist family remaining at home. While we may take some of these things for granted, they cannot. Without these things taken care of, they're crippled before they even begin to take their first steps as young adults in new and strange European countries like Albania. The period of the next 6 to 12 months is the bridge they must cross from the terror of what they've escaped to a bright future that is available to them. To do this, they need the basic things all people need to live with dignity so they can focus on their studies. They also need funds for university application, fees and visas, and they need to know they have support so when an opportunity comes for them to attend a college, a seminar, a festival, or a key career development opportunity, a minor cost isn't going to be the thing that stops them. The years of work that these kids have invested in their education, and the years of work that Alex and their other teachers have invested in these kids, now have a chance to powerfully underpin their entry into adult lives as the talented, intelligent, and dedicated young people they are. Alex hopes his friends, listeners, and fans will join him on this journey as community of friends and music lovers are given a chance to make a real direct difference for a pair of young people who finally, against all odds, got a chance of life. Now, if you're interested in this particular charitable enterprise, I've printed the relevant text from this address, plus contact details, on sheets of paper that are in the foyer there. If you would prefer to donate cash or get some assistance using GoFundMe online, we can help you on your own device at our end of the year soiree. That's the one that Grant and Brendan and Isabel will be performing at. But we can assure you, you will not be pressed to donate. The purpose of that evening isn't a fundraiser. The purpose of the evening is fun, music and fellowship. Now, everyone has their own pet projects, their own resources, their own priorities, their own economic restraints and their own obligations, things they've all already signed up to. What we're celebrating today is the urge to be generous. But finally, let's remind ourselves of that advice from the Quran. If you disclose your sadaqat, it is well. But if you conceal them and give to the poor, that is better for you. Now it is time for the benediction. May we be grateful for what we have. May we remember we don't need most of what we want, and that joy is found in simplicity and generosity. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.